und herzlich willkommen zu unserem Online-Kongress Spirituelles Geldbewusstsein. Hier erfahrt ihr, wie ihr Geld zu einer tragenden und unterstützenden und befreienden Kraft im Leben macht. Ja, ich bin hier gerade in einer großen Freiheit. Ich befinde mich auf dem Gipfel der Rodopi Mountains. Das sind die ältesten Berge in Europa. Es ist absolut faszinierend hier. Und ich besuche gerade eine noch viel faszinierendere Frau, die seit über 10 Jahren in der Wildnis lebt. Und ich besuche sie hier gerade. Sie lebt mitten in der Natur. Und sie hat uns sehr, sehr viel zu sagen über ihre Einstellung zu Geld. Und überhaupt zu Wohlsein und Wohlbefinden und Wohlstand. Das hat für sie ganz andere Werte, als wir vielleicht denken würden. So, ich bin sehr, sehr aufgeregt und ich freue mich riesig, heute mit Miriam Lenswood zu sprechen. Wir sprechen auf Englisch und das Interview wird dann übersetzt werden. Also, let's go. Hallo. Welcome, Miriam Lenswood. I'm so happy to speak to you today.
Oh, yes, thank you. So happy to do this interview together.
Yes, I introduced you already as a woman who lives in the wilderness since more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And we are very, very excited to get your views about prosperity, about wealth, about happiness. So what does wealth and happiness mean for you?
Wealth in terms of money, you mean, and
yeah,
possessions?
Yeah, in terms of being wealthy, what I mean, it might mean something completely different for you.
Yes, I always feel very wealthy when I have time, actually. Mm-hmm. So not so much in terms of money, but for example, when I've been staying in the city, and then I have to stay up very late because people stay up late in the city. And then we go back in the wilderness again, and then we sleep again at 8 o'clock. And then I think, wow, this is so wealthy. Mm-hmm. So the time to go to bed early mm-hmm. is my wealth.
Well, that's exciting. Yeah, it takes a certain lifestyle to be able to go to bed early. You see, yeah. it takes a whole universe behind it because you everything else also needs to change to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So you are very, very consequent in doing what you feel is right for you. And I also came to the conclusion, real wealth means to do the right thing for yourself in the right moment. Yeah. What's your take about that?
Yes, yes, indeed. But mm-hmm. then we're moving a little bit to freedom. So what is then freedom and wealth? Mm-hmm. And so people think, and that's why I wrote the song, Freedom is for Free. Wow. Because it's on YouTube, but it's about you don't need to be a millionaire to be free. And so how much wealth do you need in order to live a lifestyle that you really want? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the question. And I discovered you don't need much at all. You just need to have the courage to get out of the prison you're in, and that prison could be different for everyone, and then find your freedom and live accordingly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but for that you need courage more than money.
You certainly have the courage, and you certainly did that. You certainly went out of whatever it feels as a prison for you. Would you like to tell us a little bit, what did you do for 10 years with your husband Peter together?
My husband comes from New Zealand, and I met him in India. So we traveled for some time through Southeast Asia for 3 years. Then we arrived in New Zealand. And then we thought we want to do something extraordinary, something, an expedition of sorts. And we thought, what can we do? We don't have $1 million to go and live in Antarctica. But and then we thought maybe we can live 4 seasons in the wilderness. And survive of hunting and gathering plants. So I learned how to hunt with a bow and arrow, and we learned about what plants can you eat and what do we take, and it took 1 year to train and to prepare ourselves. And then we went to live in the wilderness in the mountains of New Zealand. Wow. And we took our tent and a backpack and the bow and arrow, and we moved out there, and for months we didn't see anyone.
And, how did this feel? Did this feel like real riches, real freedom?
Yeah, but you think of freedom of total happiness, but not so. Freedom can also be very overwhelming, mm-hmm. and freedom is also having no future. So it suddenly felt we had, imagine your diary with absolutely nothing in it. So just a blank sheet is your future. Well, that can be quite overwhelming at first. And it takes some time for the mind to slow down. To slow down and meet the rhythm of nature, which is much slower than our sped up mind from the city. Mm-hmm. So we had to learn the art of doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And it took 2 weeks for the mind to slow down. And in those 2 weeks, we experienced what we call deep boredom. So I discovered I spent all my life avoiding boredom. Like, I get a little bit bored, I do something else mm-hmm. before I get there. But there was no option out there. But there was very little to do at times. And we had to go through that boredom. But that feels very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it was precisely something we had avoided all our life. So we had to go through a deep conditioning to get over boredom. Mm-hmm. But then the mind slows down and the body slows down. In fact, it's very, very healthy to do so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's quite hard in the beginning to adjust to a different rhythm.
How did you feel after you got through this boredom phase? What happened when the boredom slowly dissipated? What happened then?
Then you feel very peaceful and you can just sit at the riverside and look around and look at the beauty. And you're not so restless and not so agitated. Or what am I going to do next? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do for the next 4 months? Nothing like that. You don't worry about the future anymore.
That's so exciting because you just equaled riches with having no future. I think the people who are looking at you in this interview, they will be shocked to hear that, because we think that is the freedom to have a big future. So yeah. I think you need to explain to us what exactly do you mean having no future. How is this riches? How do you equal this to riches, to well-being, to freedom?
No future. Because at all times we know what we're going to do. We know in another hour we will be there, we will be doing this, all that. But what if you don't have a clock at all? And you don't know what time it is? On cloudy days, we didn't know if it was lunchtime or dinner time. Or it's very hard to indicate what actually where you are in the day. And I discovered that is a certain security for us. It gives us safety, that clock. That we know what time it is, we know what time what day of the week and date. All that we didn't know. Yeah. So no future, we had no plans for anything, because in the wilderness we were totally subject to what is coming. So what we want to do tomorrow is irrelevant. Tomorrow a storm might be coming. We need to get firewood. I need to go hunting because tomorrow might be raining. Let's see if I'm lucky with a rabbit or not, with a hare. All of that we're subject. And that gives a very, strangely enough, a very satisfactory feeling. So we are not in power. We are subject to whatever comes. And so we have to surrender if we want it or not. And that gives a peaceful feeling.
So, yeah, surrender. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle of surrender.
That's it, yeah.
Wow.
But at the same time, we had to also be very organized. Mm-hmm. If we don't have firewood, mm-hmm. we can't cook. And then what's the point of having a goat if we can't cook it? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we get cold, we might get hypothermia. So we had to be extremely practical and organized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so interesting. And I know you were talking about the special time quality. You learned to learn about different time qualities. You are talking about Kairos time versus Chronos time. Could you explain that to us, please?
Yeah. So our daily life in society is Chronos. We mm-hmm. were born and we will die. Mm-hmm. And we are afraid for that death because we are walking towards it, right? And so we're very aware of passing time. Mm-hmm. And we measure it constantly. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's already 1 year later from last year. Mm-hmm. I'm getting older. We look constantly in the mirror to our own agony. And the Kairos time is very different. It feels like eternity. So you forget this sense of time. I think everyone has experienced this sometimes. They call it in the flow. Or, it's a timelessness. And so in that Kairos time, it's a Greek word, by the way. So they were very aware of different consciousness and time, experience of time. I think, but this is what I explore. I think in the Kairos time, you're not going linear. And 1 minute can feel like 1 hour. and also in terms of what you understand, so you can have an insight into something. So you inquire, you have an intention of what is the mind, for example, and you have an intention of finding that out. And then you might get an insight. And that insight is like this, a split second, and you understand a lot in a split second. Well, how is that possible? Normally you have to read many books about it, right? So you bypass all that time.
So when you are able to experience this special time quality, which requires to go through this boredom first and then come to this point of peace, you equal this to consciousness. You come to a state of consciousness?
Yeah, a different kind of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I think many things happen in the wilderness. For example, I started off saying the story, we wanted only four seasons, right? We ended up 7 years. In the wilderness.
7 years.
And after that, we traveled for 3 years as nomads through Europe, etc. But 7 years we did in the wilderness. And over those years, I discovered all those instincts came back. So I grew up vegetarian. Mm-hmm. I never touched meat. I nothing have anything to do with animals, mm-hmm. even. Mm-hmm. Not even living animals, let alone dead ones. And yet, when I walk around with a bow and arrow, I know how to hunt. Nobody teach me this, yeah? So because it's in my blood, it's our ancestors survived this way. And also what plants are good for us? What is good to eat for digestion? And I start to get a intuitive feeling with the plants. Yeah, and I feel the root, I lay down on the, often we put a tent under a big, big tree, so we lay down on the roots. And we feel the connection with the roots and the other trees. Everything is interconnected. And all these things no one can teach you, but it's in us. It's in our blood. You don't need to learn all these things.
So your real instinct came back, and you have it now. It's your property now. So that's your riches.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, this is amazing. So you also went out hunting. That's also absolutely amazing. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it was quite hard in the beginning. I practiced for 1 year with bow and arrow on the as archery, mm-hmm. but it's very different from actually going hunting and see an animal. Where are they? I didn't know, so I had to learn all these. I thought all of New Zealand is more or less spread, you know, filled with goats. But no, not at all. They like certain valleys and avoid other valleys. You will never see a goat there. No, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So we talked with other people, other hunters, and they said, the goats are in such and such valley. You should go there. Yeah. But it's wonderful to be a human. Because humans have so many qualities. They can hunt, but they also have the memory and the ability to speak to other hunters. You can go there. You can go there. And the memory of, last year I've seen a goat here. Yeah. And then put all the things together. Yeah, it's the ultimate intelligence.
The ultimate intelligence.
Yeah.
That sounds really fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the motivation that you went out in the jungle and you live this extreme life? Do you consider yourself a spiritual person? Is it a spiritual way of life? Can we say that?
Yeah, maybe, because you slow down. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to put aside all what you think is spirituality. So I grew up as a Christian, you know, from my family, and mm-hmm. I thought maybe if I'm out there, God will talk to me. Mm-hmm. And so I sit there, and after a while I think, well, if there's a God out there, he's not going to speak to me. At least I'm not hearing anything. And also I thought I will become enlightened, I will be this and all that. And I discovered I had to put that all aside. In the end, I came to the conclusion, we are just animals, just like other animals. If a deer sees me walking, they wonder about our strange color of the skin. Yes. That's it, we are animals. So we have to go very basic in order to then discover, for example, the connection with plants. That was years later, after I had concluded that there was nothing. There is no matter. So after that, you can discover what actually spirituality is, because it's so easy to make it up. So easy to invent it.
Invent it.
Invent spirituality. Yeah, I'm very spiritual. I can talk to God. It's very tricky. What is imagination and what is spirituality?
Wow.
Yeah. So you have to become very down to earth first.
So if I understand you correctly, you first had to become very, very down to ground before you found the real spirituality.
Yeah, definitely. Correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to put aside everything. Yeah.
And you find out the animal and the plant and the herb and the tree and the fruit. They are just as spiritual as anything else, right?
Yeah, in a way. And everything is interconnected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you later on, I read books about how the trees communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, of course, it's the same with our gut flora. And everything has its own intelligence. Mm-hmm. And we think we are the only one with thought, and I think thought is very, very limited.
So how does the communication travel between a tree and your gut flora or whatever?
Indeed. How does a plant communicate with me about the medicinal properties, you mean? Such an example. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. You just know it happens.
Yeah, that's right. But the question itself is very scientific thinking. Like, how does it work? Like, how does the telephone work? And you pull it apart and you see the cables, right? Yeah.
So it's absolutely not of your concern how it works. You know it works and it's there. That's
yeah, I also don't know how the telephone works. It's a miracle to me too. This machine, how does that work? Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Someone does. Yeah.
As you know, I told you the community that is looking at this interview, I know they will be very interested in you and what you have to say. Our concern is to find out what is money speaking materiality, material life. But you are talking about the material, the real life all the time already. So what is your relationship to money? I guess you don't need much money, but I guess you also need some money. Or what is your relationship with money?
I think it's very important to understand that money represents time. So if I spend $100, it means that somewhere I have to work for that $100. Mm-hmm. Is it worth it to me? Most of the time, it isn't. I don't feel like working for that something I might only use once or enjoy once. But that's also a personal choice. It's the same actually as food. Mm-hmm. I look at a hamburger and I think, oh, I have to go running for 1 hour to eat that. No, it's not worth it. I don't feel like going running, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the same with money. Can I afford it? And a lot of the time, I don't need it. I don't need it. But I think a lot of people in the city, they work, they don't enjoy their job. And the end of the week, they think, oh, I have deserved, you know, a beer or something in a pub, and it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they spend their money, and next Monday they have to go again. Yeah. So I think it's very important, what I say to everyone is, work your ass off, have 3 jobs, sleep in your car, don't spend money on rent, and take all your savings after 1 year, and live 10 years for free. Yeah, rather than half-half, rather than, oh, I work 1 day a week and then rent is very high and you come out with no savings and in the end of your life, you're still broke.
Is this what you did? Did you have a job before and then you took your savings and you went out in the wilderness?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was working as a teacher, a physical education teacher. I saved every cent and I didn't go in any, meetings, those gatherings on Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. I didn't do all that. So I've become very asocial person.
So you knew already as a teacher that you will be out there sooner or later.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And I spent very little money, to be honest. Yeah, I'm not so good at making money, but good at saving.
Good at not needing money.
Yeah, that's right. I enjoy being out here and I made little tea or we light a little fire now and have a cup of tea. Mm-hmm. Rather than going to a restaurant and paying big money for a cup of tea. Yeah, I enjoy being independent and just simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in our community, we talk a lot about financial freedom. You know, that's a big word for us.
Yeah.
So is this financial freedom for you? Or what is financial freedom for you?
Financial freedom is having enough money.
Having enough money. And what enough is,
exactly.
That's a matter of interpretation and lifestyle.
Yeah. I feel I have enough money. I can buy, if I have an emergency, I have enough money to pay for it. I think it's very important.
Yes.
And for the rest, I can afford just about anything, but I choose not to.
You choose not to afford it. That's a big
one. I choose not to buy it.
That's a big one. Yeah. Say that again, please. You choose not to.
I can afford just about anything, but I choose not to buy it.
Yeah. This is a very, very important for me to hear from you, because this is the big problem with so many people out there. They even, you know, they go get indebted to buy whatever they think they can afford.
Yeah.
And then they go, they are indebted, and they get into this slavery state of slavery. They don't get out anymore.
Yeah.
And I noticed they don't have the mosque. They don't have the willpower. I don't like the word willpower, but I can't think of another word right now. They don't have the determination to say, no, I don't spend that money now. I keep it for my freedom. And you have money, and you choose not to spend it because you keep your freedom that way.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I think most people suffer from peer pressure their entire life. So they identify themselves as a person who is social, as a person who buys presents, as a person who goes to parties, etc. But all that costs money.
What kind of pressure did you say? Peer pressure? They suffer?
Peer pressure.
Peer pressure. Yeah, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so your friends say, your friends find it normal that you come with them for dinner. Well, that costs a lot of money.
Yes.
And for that you need to work. Mm-hmm. And that requires an entire lifestyle. And do you still want it?
Yes.
So maybe one day in your life say, sorry, friends and family and everyone I know, but I want to become a different person. I will not go and drink coffee anymore. I will not go to restaurants anymore. I'm not going to buy new clothes anymore. I'm not going to drive around anymore. And in fact, I'm going to leave the country. So it requires a lot of courage to step out of everything you know, mm-hmm. your whole safety net. So do you really want to become that person? Maybe not.
I think what many people hear is they feel they are afraid of loneliness. Isn't this the choice of loneliness?
Yeah, so spending money is much deeper than just, I'll buy that or I don't. It's with identification with the personality.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So true.
And for me, it's easy. I always walk in the same clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I only got a backpack. I hardly got any belongings. Why? Everyone already expects that of me. It's easy. I am the person who lives in the wilderness and all that. Of course you don't want to waste money on a restaurant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy for me, but not if I was living in society and I had a group of friends who expect. So it's so much to do with expectations.
Yes, I'm really surprised to hear certain things from you, which many people out there would think is a sign of poverty. For example, you isolate yourself from society a little bit, or do you? Is that correct or not correct? Because many people would think isolation from society is poverty. But what mm-hmm. I hear, that is the ultimate riches.
Yeah.
Please explain.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I feel mm-hmm. I'm out of society because I haven't got a normal job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't intend one. I don't have the comforts of society, I guess. No insurance or anything like that. And no big group of friends or anything. But I also don't have stress. I also don't have a burnout. I don't have a diary and all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel I have more money than a lot of my friends who are working their life away. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what I hear is that you are not lonely. You didn't find loneliness with your isolation or your retreat from society or expectations of society. But what you found is, after you got through that crisis of loneliness, you find this inner peace and this true reality and the true spirituality in the plants and in the real nature around you. Is that mm-hmm. true? In the reality around you?
Yeah, I never really felt lonely. Because mm-hmm. life in the mountains in New Zealand is so full. There is nothing to miss.
Mm-hmm.
There's huge mountains, river, forest. We've always got a fire that keeps us warm.
Mm-hmm.
Also on the inside. Of course, I was with Peter.
Yes.
Then I went hunting and there was so much to explore, so much beauty.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very hard to be lonely if you surround yourself with beauty. There is a link there. If I'm in the city, For some reason, I feel very lonely. Mm-hmm. And also so unhappy in that ugliness. The world is so beautiful, yet most people live in ugliness. Why?
That's very powerful.
Yeah. Why not live in a beautiful place? Why not go around? Mm-hmm. Do people feel they're not worth it? Mm-hmm. Are they destined to be in ugly places? Why?
Powerful.
Yeah. Why not live in a beautiful place? And I do think you feel less lonely in a beautiful place.
And if you can't afford a house, you pitch a tent.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, here we found a little hut ourselves here in the wilderness. You don't have to live in a tent, but yeah, a little hut. Make it nice and cozy, the way you want it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Make friends. People are afraid to leave their friends behind, but hey, the world is for so many billions of people, you can make new friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like-minded friends.
Yeah, like-minded. But now we live near a Bulgarian village. I cannot speak much with them. Maybe they are not like-minded. And yet there is some sort of friendship.
Yes.
We say hello. I think they like me. I like them.
Yeah, they are very warm. I noticed that already.
Yeah.
Wow, this is really very exciting here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you are saying what I hear is where there is beauty, there is riches.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And also with concern to money, people say, yeah, but I like my comfort. But I said, oh, but you are working every day and you run in traffic jam every day. Mm-hmm. How is that comfort? Mm-hmm. That to me is ultimate discomfort. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, having enough money, living very simple is total comfort. Going to bed early, as I said in the beginning. Yeah.
Yes, and you are not alone because you are with your husband, Peter. Mm-hmm. And Peter is a philosopher, very interesting man. It's a pity he's not with us today. Maybe he will talk to me later. I would really love to do that. Mm-hmm. And Peter is a very, very scholared philosopher. And you live these meta questions. Mm-hmm. So you have a philosophical basis of what you are doing. You know exactly what you are doing. Could you tell us about this meta question that you live with Peter?
Yeah, when I met Peter in India, he used to be a university professor in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And he looked out of the window and thought, I should be out there. He said, you got to live this stuff rather than just write about it or read about it. Mm-hmm. And so he went with one small backpack to India with the meta question of what is true freedom?
What is true freedom? Very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he spent 6 years living the answer. Mm-hmm. Not answering, but living the answer. You know, because as Einstein once said, mm-hmm. You can have the same questions because the answer is totally different all the time. He gave this famous example of he gave students twice the same exam. And he said, oh, we had those questions last year. He said, oh, yes, but the answers has changed.
Wow.
Yeah, so same with life. Eh? So what is true freedom? The answer changes all the time. Anyway, that was my first introduction into meta questions. I thought, oh, that's interesting. And so we went out into the wilderness and we had our meta question was, what happens to body and mind when living far away from civilization?
What happens to body and mind when living far away from civilizations?
Yeah.
Okay, got it?
Yeah, and so it took almost 7 years to come to some sort of an answer. Mm-hmm. But what happens is that in those big mountains, we are very, very small. We feel very small. You know, we're frightened when the lightning comes and when the river is flooded, now can we not go anywhere? And we are very small and our problems in our head, what we said to someone 15 years ago is even smaller. So small, then they dissolve after time. Not solved by thinking about it, but dissolve. They are irrelevant. All our psychological problems are irrelevant because we are busy living and we are overwhelmed by the mountains and the rivers and the forest and the fire. Yeah. And so those problems dissolve and the mind becomes more empty. And what happens is you become more, have more clarity. Because your mind is not so you can see what happens. And if you can see what happens, you can see that you don't need to be afraid now for that. Because that what you're afraid of is not here. Right now, we're not afraid of crocodile, right? There's no crocodiles here. But we do this all the time. We are afraid of things that might happen, right?
What strikes me when I talk to you is your amazing clarity. I've rarely come upon a person that is so clear about how you feel, what you want, what's the next step, what do I do now, why I'm here. It's amazing. I'm very impressed with that.
Yeah, that's the natural effect of living in a very quiet space in the mountains. Yeah, this is another natural thing. It's not something I've cultivated. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you have found your way of life and you don't care, or that's the wrong way of saying it. You are not concerned about the future. The future will happen by itself. Is that right?
That's always the case, yeah. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, 3 years ago, we're traveling through Australia and Peter got sick with kidney failure. And it's a very serious, very serious illness, and he was diagnosed with chronic kidney failure, which means he will die. Mm-hmm. And that's a fact. And it's very important for me to see that one day he will die, maybe sooner than later. The doctors gave him 5 years, and that's now 4 years ago.
Wow.
And it's very important for both of us to see and to live with death. And only 2 weeks ago he had a problem with his heart. And I thought, well, maybe this is the day. Maybe he will die. He was against ringing an ambulance. Not that the ambulance could come to us. But he didn't want any medical help, no doctor, nothing. He said, I will either live or die. And that moment will come anyway. It doesn't matter if it's now or next year or 10 years. It will come anyway. And so over the years we had to live with death. And I realized, if you live with death, life becomes much more intense.
Yes.
And actually, much more beautiful. Everything becomes more beautiful. And I thought it's actually well worth living with death to see the intensity of life.
So fascinating, because when I hear you talk, there's not a trace of fear or angst. There's just talk about beauty and life and aliveness, and now here you are and you say we are living with death, so that seems to be interconnected.
Yeah, that's right. We become very, very practical. Like, there is a thunderstorm coming and we need to prepare. Now death is coming and I need to prepare myself. I need to get into my head that he will die. It could be this afternoon, it could be next year. And then the day after I have to organize his funeral. Very practical things, all the finance, and then I have to find my own life and be on my own and not collapse and fall into a black hole. No. But you say I'm not a trace of angst and all the rest of it. No, it's easy. We are in a very comfortable place, we're in the sunshine.
Yeah.
I am sure I will fall apart and be an absolute wretch, but that I know too. Yeah.
But you are not afraid of it.
Oh, it's inevitable. Yeah. It's like growing up, yeah? You cannot be afraid of it. Well, you can be, but it happens.
Very, very interesting. So this, I hear this practicality.
Yeah.
You are spiritual in a very, very, for me, it's almost overwhelming way, because it's so real. The way you are spiritual is so real. And the way you are rich is so real. And many people out there who consider themselves very spiritual, they do yoga, they do meditation, they have been in the nirvana, whatever. And when it comes to the real life, and when it comes to money, you know, you are very money aware. You know, you get your finances organized.
Very practical.
You even prepare for the funeral.
Yeah.
In finance.
So yeah.
Yeah. That's very real, you know.
Yeah. Very real.
And so I see this practicality with in combination with your down to earth spirituality.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to say to these spiritual people out there?
I think it's very important to be very down to earth and to put all aside that is not real. Because one day actually I had an insight. I write about that in my first book. That actually we're living in an abstract world. You can walk somewhere and think about a totally different place. And I think that is the most important thing, to get all that abstraction away, and that's also all the fear away. But if you put a fear all away, you also put all your made-up spirituality away, because it's in the same realm. It's made up, it's abstract. Yeah, that might be hard, because a lot of us are identifying with being spiritual. You feel safe because you have your spirituality. Well, is that actually real? Because that doesn't get you through fear. That doesn't get you through tragic moments, death of a loved one or disease or whatever. Yeah, you have to be very down to earth and do what is needed to be done. Yeah, and then actually the hunting has helped in with me with that. So I see a beautiful animal and I line up, dead. It's very real.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to ask you, but I didn't dare to ask. I mean, we all eat a hamburger from time to time. There's ham in it. So someone killed an animal for us.
Yeah.
You are very real, very honest. You are doing the killing yourself. But how does it feel to kill an animal?
Yeah, it was very hard, especially the first one, this little goat. And the parents were sort of standing around and completely in shock what had happened. And I cried. I think it's terrible. What am I doing here? But then when we ate the meat and I feel like I am part of this, the animal is now part of me. And you know what? Life and death is one of the same circle. But I still have the horn of this first god that I just talked about around my neck for the symbol of we are part of this life and death. So if you don't include death in your life, you're not really living. Because
it's a cycle.
It's inevitable.
So interesting. We just recently talked about spirituality, and you mentioned that you observe many spiritual people, they are not organized. Can you talk about this? Because you are very organized.
Yeah, a lot of spiritual people, they also think, well, money is bad. Is as filthy rich, right? Why filthy? So it's something negative. And to do all the paperwork and all that is for people and officers who are not spiritual. So they avoid all the very practical, tedious little job. And why cannot you be both? Be spiritual and be organized. Because our brain is very adaptable, and our brain can do all sorts of things at the same time.
Betsy's coming! Betsy, that's the dog. My little dog.
The doggy is coming, yeah.
It went for a walk. Very interesting. I think this also relates to the money question. You can be spiritual and at the same time you can be rich. I see you shining when you say, I have enough money. I don't need to work for the rest of my life. I think that's a form of organized spirituality. Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Because you need to get your money thing sorted. Yeah, and not putting it aside because you don't want to identify with it. Yeah, definitely.
So did you say not identify with the money?
Yeah, don't identify with being against money.
Yeah.
Because then you have money problems for the rest of your life, which means you think about it in the back of your head. Yeah, it's ruling your life if you don't think about it, because it's part of this world.
So you are a fan of having enough money and be organized financially as well, and then live your life.
Yeah, indeed. Get real, the same with death. So I have to get through to my brain that one day Peter will die and then I'm on my own. Same with, I have to organize my money, my finance, because that's just part of life.
Very good. Very interesting. I'm so glad I met you. I learned so much from you, from your example. It's very, very inspiring to have someone who lives this inspired, real life, the reality of spirituality, I would say. And that includes money, that includes to be financially organized, that includes to be practically organized, and that includes to be real with everything that surrounds us. What I hear, riches is to be in nature and not in an ugly environment. And it is absolutely fascinating, the energy that emanates from you. It's overwhelming.
Thank you. you. Thank you so much. It's been so much inspiration to meet you.
Yes, yeah. Thank you, Miriam, so much. And Miriam has written two books. If you want to know more about her and her adventures with Peter, you can find her on YouTube. We will put the links down below, and you can purchase her book. Just push the button below, and you can find out everything about Miriam.
Yeah, and my first book is Peter. Translated in German, In der Wildnis bin ich frei.
Ah, cool. So we will link.
The second one is only book. In English, mm-hmm. In Dutch. Mm-hmm. It's called Wild at Heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the first one I've written in English and was translated into Dutch. Most people think I've written in Dutch because I'm from Holland. Mm-hmm. But that was called Woman in the Wilderness.
Woman in the Wilderness.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Miriam. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. Yes, thank you.